Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Q, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Tampa Bay Rays advanced after winning the wild card last night over the A's 5-1. Yandy Diaz set the tone with a pair of home runs.
Now the pitch to him. Swinging another one deep in the air towards right field. Heading back, Laureano turns and looks. How about another homer? Yandy Diaz makes it 4-0 Rays. To the same spot as the first one, an opposite field solo home run. 4-0 Rays in the third.
The Rays are ready to jump out of that first base dugout and do some celebrating. Logan gets the sign. The right-hander is ready to go. The pitch on its way. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. And Houston, here we come.
Yep, you got the Astros. Good luck. Okay. Hey, give the Rays credit. They'll use 44 pitchers over the seven-game series. That should be enough.
So much for one pitcher after another last night. Charlie Morton, he was close to 70 pitches. Then again, they had a good lead at that point. So.
Yeah, but you know what? You notice what they did last night? They went to an established guy as a starting pitcher, and they didn't fool around with this opener and all that other stuff. It's like, you know, they just looked at it and said, you know what? He's won two games in the postseason. Why don't you take the ball? There we go. Okay. It's amazing how sometimes the old ways still work. Tim Newton, one of the great guys and an outstanding broadcaster, the play-by-play voice of Purdue football. Tim, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show.
Well, first I was going to wonder how you're going to segue me into the old ways. I thought there was some sort of a link there. And I'm glad you brought up Yandy Diaz because... And I know this will be of great interest to the folks there in central Pennsylvania. I won my fantasy baseball league this year, which is a bunch of media guys that cover Purdue. And he was, until he got hurt, a big part of my early season fantasy push. So I was really thrilled to see him have success last night.
Well, so were both the fans in Tampa. All right, so...
That's about right.
Well, I'm listening to the game on Saturday as you played Minnesota. And I'm listening when Elijah Sindelar went down and Rondale Moore went down. And your words were, to paraphrase the effect, that is the worst possible scene that Purdue fans could see on one single play. How disheartening was that to see?
It was almost surreal. I mean, you're looking out there, and at first I could see Elijah right away was hurt because you could tell the defensive player came down on him, and it was pretty apparent. It was either a shoulder or collarbone. It turned out to be a broken collarbone. And then about 5 seconds later, wait a minute, there's somebody laying at midfield. Well, wait a minute, that's Rondale Moore, and he can't get up. It was unbelievable. And I know that injuries are a part of every sports scene. I don't care, football, basketball, you name it. But if you're going to list Purdue's best five players, and they could be in any order, Rondale Moore, Elijah Sindelar, Bryson Hopkins, Marcus Bailey, Lorenzo Neal. They've only got one of those five guys playing right now. It's right. Not just the number, it's the folks that are injured.
Yeah, and in fact, Hopkins was throwing up on the field during the game. So,
which was really pretty disgusting to be able to see that from the sixth floor. And that's the second time that's happened to him. He had the same thing in the opener at Nevada, where he was, for whatever reason, he thinks it was altitude sickness in that one. This game, he got hit early in the stomach, and I don't know if that was a problem or if he just needs to change his pregame meal. But and it was a big factor because he was really ineffective on Saturday and didn't catch a single pass in the game. So it was not a good day at Ross-Ade Stadium for the home team on Saturday.
No, and every name that you named in the five are all veterans along the way. So what has this done now for Jeff Brohm and the youth of the team he is dealing with?
Well, to give you an idea, Steve, where this team stacks up, on that first trip to Nevada a month ago, they had seven seniors on the flight to Nevada. So that tells you right now where we are in terms of inexperience. And what does it do? It forces a lot of guys who would ordinarily be redshirting, or at least not in starting or main roles, to get on the field pretty early, which is tough in 2019. You hope that pays dividends in 2020 and 2021. Right. But right now, you got a whole bunch of guys out there on both sides of the ball that really probably are not quite ready to play yet, but have to, because the rules tell you you have to put 11 guys out there at a time.
You know, it's interesting. I thought what I saw from Jack Plummer was a guy that really benefited from playing the TCU game. It seemed to me like he had a little better handle on the speed for the game. You see him all the time. Did you see the same thing or something different?
I saw the same thing. I think what has impressed, a couple of things that are impressive about Jack Plummer. First of all, he's a really smart kid. His redshirt year last year, and he's in the business school here at Purdue. He had a perfect grade point average both semesters. So you know he's got the ability to think on his feet. The other thing that he's able to do very naturally, and it's usually a gift and not something that you really have to work, is he's able to shift and move in the pocket very naturally, keeping his eyes down the field and kind of feel where the pressure is coming from. And we saw that really more against Minnesota than we did against TCU. The other thing that really helped him Saturday compared to 2 weeks ago is Purdue was able to run the football a little bit.
Yes.
King DeRue, a true freshman out of Amarillo, Texas, came in and ran for 94 yards in his first game, scored 3 touchdowns, and really was kind of a difference maker. So it wasn't all on Jack to have to throw the football all over the field. You know, Purdue beat Vanderbilt earlier this year and scored 42 points in a game where they only ran the ball for 31 yards. Because they threw it for over 500 that day. Well, you can't do that against every defense. And, you know, you don't expect a Jack Plummer to be able to come in and do what an Elijah Sindelar can do with 5 years of experience here. So he was much better, I thought, on Saturday, and hopefully for Purdue fans, he'll take a step this week in a very hostile environment. And then you've got some winnable games coming up here at home against Maryland and home against Illinois, where you hope to get some of these guys back, and you hope that experience will really pay off.
You mentioned King DeRue as a running back. The only rushing touchdown Purdue had before he scored twice on Saturday was from Elijah Sindelar. But he also caught a touchdown pass in this game. Does Plummer look at DeRue as a reliable outlet for him?
A little bit. I think there's another running back that you'll see on Saturday, Xander Horvath, who's probably more of a receiving threat than King is, but they do look to throw the ball as an outlet to the running backs. The one thing that Jeff Brohm has done, and consistently, even this year with the injuries, he'll spread the ball around in the offense. They throw the ball a lot to the tight end. They throw to the running backs. They're going to try and get all the receivers involved. I do think Purdue has a star in the making at receiver other than Rondale Moore, and that's a kid named David Bell, who was very highly recruited out of Warren Central High School in Indianapolis and had the opportunity to go play for some of the Blue Bloods and decided to stay at home. And he had a hamstring injury early in training camp and really was hampered at the start of the season. But these last 2 weeks, we've seen what all the hype was about, and he caught 8 passes for over 100 yards last week, and I'm sure he'll be the primary target this week against Penn State.
He's averaging better than 17 yards a catch to this point. He has been obviously a bright spot. Let's go to the defensive side. Obviously, no Neal, no Bailey. Yeah, I know.
To?
At some point, we do have to discuss it. But, you know, no Neal, no Bailey. But yep. I want to get to the corners first. I'm sure the younger players are very talented, but there are 2 veterans being displaced there, at least for the moment. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, is this a changing of the guard, or is this sending a message, or a little bit of both?
I would say a little bit of both, but probably more in the sending a message, because the 2 guys that are being replaced in the starting lineup this week, Dedrick Mackey and Kenneth Major, are both still young. I mean, it's not like you're taking a couple of seniors out of the lineup. These guys are both, they both have a lot of football to play, but pretty clearly neither one of them played very well on Saturday. I mean, Tanner Morgan's a decent quarterback for Minnesota, but he's not 21 of 22 good for almost 400 yards. And I can tell you, the 21 completions he made, there wasn't a difficult throw in the bunch. I mean, these guys were wide, wide open, and it was very disappointing. Jeff Brohm was very upset about it after the game and said that there would be changes, and there will be changes. So, you know, I do think, though, you mentioned Marcus Bailey, and I think not only did you lose one of your best defenders there, but you lost your leader on the field. And Marcus was the guy that would get guys in the right position. And he was the guy that would get in somebody's face if they made a mistake. And he's also the guy that, when the pressure got intense, would bring everybody together in the huddle and get everybody calmed down. You're missing that coach out on the field right now. And I think it's becoming apparent that they miss his presence, not only from a football standpoint, but from a leadership standpoint right now defensively.
The fifth-year guy, though, is in the middle, and that's Ben Holt. What kind of player has he developed into? Because he does have 44 tackles through the opening four.
You know, he's a guy, Steve, that's always around the ball. Not the most physically gifted. I mean, he does not have great size. He's a little bit under 6 feet tall. Not the strongest guy, but he's the tough guy. And if you've been around his dad, Nick, the defensive coordinator, you understand that. Other than the hair, which, you know, Nick has lost his for a while, they're spitting images of each other. Ben is he is exactly what you would expect a defensive coordinator's son to play like. His hair is on fire, and he's at 100% from the word go. He's one guy that you'd never have to worry about effort or being prepared. He does have some physical limitations, but it's been really a godsend to have him here, because I shudder to think where this defense would be right now without him.
And I want to get now to the, I think, was a very talented defensive end, and that is Carl Aftis. What has allowed him to excel, and is he a guy that, as the time goes, they will build around?
Oh, there's no question. He came in here, and just like David Bell, and probably more so maybe than David Bell, and even like Rondale Moore, George Karloftis could have played anywhere. I mean, Michigan was here all the time trying to get him to come up there, and you mentioned any blue blood. Alabama offered. I mean, this kid could have played anywhere in the country. And it's really an interesting story. His dad was Greek, and the family lived in Greece until he was in eighth grade. His dad died unexpectedly of a heart attack in his late 30s. His mom was originally here from West Lafayette, so she decided to move the family back to the United States. George, until he was in eighth grade, had never played football and had really never watched football. He had played, you know, water polo and soccer and whatever else you would play in Greece, but he was football was brand new to him when he came here as an eighth grader, and he immediately took to it because it was physical. And one thing about George that you'll see is he's 18 years old. He just turned 18 this summer, and he is a physical specimen. He's taking on guys that are fourth-year players, fifth-year players, and he's moving them around when he's out on the field. He's still learning the game. You know, he's played football now for 4 or 5 years, but his work ethic is unbelievable. They have to chase him out of the weight room. They have to chase him out of the football complex. He has a burning desire to succeed, and he's a kid that as he physically matures, and he will get stronger and even bigger, and that's kind of scary to think about. He's going to be in that den of defensive ends here at Purdue that we've produced over the years. I think his name is going to be right up there when it's all said and done.
I felt going into the season that Purdue had a chance to have one of the top special teams units in the Big Ten. I mean, anytime you have Moore as a punt returner, a kick returner, you're going to get instant notice. But Dellinger, Cormier the punter, yeah. Without Moore, obviously, this changes. But what about the kicking part of the ball, and how important has that been and can be for Purdue?
Well, actually, one of the bright lights of this season so far has been J.D. Dellinger. He's a kid that a couple of years ago, he split kicking duties with it. They had a transfer from Baylor named Spencer Evans, who has a bigger leg than J.D., not quite as accurate all the time, but they literally split every other kick 2 years ago, and even to the point of extra points, whatever. Last year, Spencer beat him out, and so they decided to just redshirt J.D., and I think it was kind of a make-or-break offseason, and he has done a tremendous amount of work to build up his leg strength. He has only had 2 kickoffs returned this year, and I know you've got a similar situation there with your transfer where he's just booting the ball out of the end zone. He made a 53-yard field goal that would have been good probably from 60 or 63, which would have been an unthinkable 2 years ago. So he's been everything they could have asked for. Cormier, who's the freshman punter, has been exactly what you would expect a freshman punter to be, and that is 60 yards one time and 20 the next.
Right.
You know, so that's a 40-yard average, but it's not exactly right down the middle. Probably, and Jeff Brohm has been in the pro game, he's been in the college game, he said he's never seen a kid with a stronger leg punting the football. So it's just a matter with this kid of consistency. So, you know, I don't know what you'll see Saturday. Again, he could boom at 60 and it could go 30 sideways, so stay tuned on that. The return game, you're right. With a guy like Rondale Moore, you would expect more production. They had a couple of nice returns early in the season where we had penalties and had him call back. Rondale made an incredibly costly mistake in the Nevada game. Purdue's up in that game 31-14 late in the third quarter, has all the momentum. Nevada punts the ball, and he tried to field about a 10-hopper. He fumbled it. They recovered. They kicked a field goal, which was good that Purdue held him to a field goal, but it got the Nevada crowd and the players back into the game, and then they wind up with a fourth-quarter comeback. So I would say special teams has been a mixed bag. The kickers themselves have been pretty good. The return game, not so much.
Finally, Tim, obviously everyone knew in the offseason that Louisville would go after Jeff Brohm for obvious reasons. Yet he elected to stay. Now, this isn't just about the stability of the program going forward. I think that's obvious. But what does it tell Purdue fans about his commitment and what he thinks Purdue football can be because he elected to stay?
Well, I think it tells Purdue fans a lot, but it also talks about the commitment, finally, that the Board of Trustees here have made, that the president has made, that the athletic director has made, and that is if you're going to play in a conference that includes Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan and Wisconsin and you go on down the line, you can't do it shopping in the blue light special lane. You've got to pony up. You've got to pay the coaches that you need to pay to be here. Jeff Brohm is a great fit for Purdue, and I think vice versa. You know, the stories of him driving the same 2004 car are true because I see it in the parking spot all the time. He's a very simple guy. He's football all the time. And I think he felt that there was unfinished business here. Jeff understood that if he had taken the Louisville job, and I can tell you, until the day it was announced, that nobody, and I'm including the athletic director in that, nobody knew what he was going to do. I mean, this was literally the biggest cliffhanger you've ever seen. To the point, Rondale Moore met with him the afternoon that he announced, and I can tell you for a fact that if Jeff Brohm had left, Rondale Moore would have followed him. He would have set, that would have set Purdue football back to the Hazel era, probably minus 5 years, because you would have lost all the momentum from year one. You would have lost a large number of players on your current roster, and you probably would have lost most of your recruiting class, which for Purdue turned out to be a top 25 class, which is really unheard of here. So it was probably one of the biggest positive things that's happened to Purdue football in the last, certainly the last quarter century. And fans are disappointed, and I understand the 1-3 start is not what they expected, and barring a minor, you know, miracle on Saturday, it has a chance of going to 1-4. But I think they see the light at the end of the tunnel here, that he is bringing in players that can compete for championships. It's just, I mean, this is a ridiculously young football team right now. Not just the kind of young, this is ridiculously young. But you hope that that pays off here in the next couple of years and they can contend and be a player in the Big Ten West.
Because they'll sell out for basketball, 14-123 in Mackey. I'm telling you, successful Purdue football will sell out, too. I think the fans are aching for a winner, and they're aching for a winner with stability.
We've already seen it, Steve, in the last 2 years. Each of the last 2 years, Purdue has led the nation in attendance increase in percentages. Yeah. And we've been over 50,000, which, again, I know according to, you know, Penn State standards is half your stadium. But, you know, this stadium only seats about 57,000. Right. And it's starting to rock again. It's starting to be a factor all of a sudden. It's, you know, sometimes it's actually hard to hear at a Purdue football game, which it has not been the case. Yeah, I think you're right. I think if fans know that they're going to see an exciting product on the field, which I think Jeff has produced, if they're going to compete, which they've done even this last week when they fell behind or big to Minnesota and almost came back, right. and that there's some hope There's some hope for the future, and I think there is hope here. And again, everybody wants to win now, and we're no different. But this program is headed in the right direction under Jeff. There's no question.
Tim, I'm really looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thanks a lot for giving us the time today. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Look forward to seeing you, too.
All right. The outstanding Tim Newton. What a great job he does on the Purdue Radio Network. We will come back, final half hour, the voice of the Penguins, one of them. Obviously, Mike Lang is the primary voice of the Penguins, but Josh Getzoff, as Mike does fewer and fewer road games, Josh is doing more and more of them. We'll talk with him about the NHL season in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Boy, another great day for Chris Elio. You see that?
Oh, Mickey, that's right. Yeah, bad news at lunchtime, yeah.
What do you mean, bad news? Elio's applied for the job. he's been aching for this chance.
Yeah, but then again, now my bullpen's depleted here on the show. That affects us, too, here.
I understand that. I mean, he's not going to get the job. I mean, they listened to the show the other day. They're not going to give him the job based on that performance.
I will say this. Now with Mickey gone with the Mets now, you got seven openings in Major League Baseball. So if the Phillies are going to do something, they got to figure out if Gabe's going to stay or going to go. So they can't really waste time on this because, I mean, those slots are going to fill up rather quickly.
I'm sure once they're done looking at the analytics, they'll make a decision.
I saw what you did there. Okay.
Thank you.
And the funny part is we were talking about last night post game with the Rays over the A's. We're talking about analytics. It's just all over the place now.
Yeah.
You never heard that growing up at a post game show, players talking on the field. One guy brings up analytics.
Yeah, I mean, hitting, fielding, and pitching probably, you know. Oh, our analytics are great. Oh, well, I thought you were hitting, pitching, and fielding pretty good. I'm sorry, but certain things it helps you. You know, positioning of players, shifting, things like that. There's no doubt it helps you. I'm not completely sold on all of it, but I think it does tell a story. I think one of the primary things the analytics does do is that when a player says, no, that's not true. No, I got some numbers here.
I saw that the Tampa Bay payroll was something like $53 million, and Charlie Morton accounts of, he's getting 13, 15 of that?
Yeah, he does. And he has a two-year deal, so it's one more year to go.
But that paid off last night for
him. Absolutely paid off for them. It got them into the next round. I mean, and they didn't use the, let's go to the parking lot and get the next guy to pitch. They went with a guy that has been there before, can start and get it done. All right, the NHL season, while Tampa Bay extended its season last night, the NHL began its season last night. Washington Capitals, in overtime, beat the defending Stanley Cup champion Blues. Edmonton won last night. Toronto Maple Leafs got off to a good start. They won last night. The Penguins will open tonight with Buffalo. Josh Getzoff. Yes, Mike Lang is still the voice of the Penguins, but does not do every game. Josh Getzoff will get the call tonight. Josh, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Steve. Great to be back with you. Ready for some hockey.
Yeah, ready for some hockey. All right. There's in a lot of ways been a remake of the team, which in turn will always change a team's personality. So what did you see in camp in the preseason personality-wise from this team?
Well, I think the group on the whole is very different, as you mentioned. Really, if you go back to the trade deadline last year, Steve, the emphasis that I've seen from Jim Rutherford has been to try to get back to those Penguins teams that were championship teams in 16 and 17 as far as the identity is concerned. And by that, I mean you try to get younger, which is easier said than done in the NHL, and you try to get faster, which is way easier said than done in the NHL because every team's playing with speed nowadays. But when it came to what the Penguins did, I think if you, like as I mentioned, if you look back to last year, they acquire Marcus Pettersson. They trade Derek Brassard and Riley Sheahan for Nick Bjugstad and Jared McCann, who were both at least 5 years younger than the guy they were traded for. And then, you come around to this season and the offseason, you trade a 30-plus-year-old Phil Kessel, you get a 25-year-old Alex Galchenyuk, yep. You get a 23-year-old Dominic Cahoon, you get a 26-year-old Brandon Tanev. So what I think they've done is they've added a lot more youth to the roster, which is nice in theory, but I think those players they brought in have also given them a little bit more depth and scoring punch. So the biggest thing for me that I've noticed in training camp is that the group seems to kind of gel. It seems to have gelled fairly quickly, and the on-ice results wouldn't necessarily speak to that, but I'm able to see a lot in the dressing room and behind the scenes, and I know they've come together quickly. A lot of guys were in town very early, a couple weeks before training camp, actually. We're able to do some team bonding events away from the rink, and they seem that they're in a pretty good place, all of them together, to get going tomorrow night.
What's the sense you get about Jack Johnson?
My sense is that he's going to play tomorrow night. He's going to be in the starting – or not the starting five, but he'll be in the opening night lineup for the Penguins. And I know that that's probably going to make some people's ears bleed of your listeners that are Penguins fans. But the bottom line is that I think the Penguins want to see what the situation is going to be early on. I don't think it's lost on anybody that with Brian Rust going to long-term injured reserve, they're keeping John Marino in the fold, who's been extremely impressive in the preseason. But – by doing that, they have 9 defensemen on their opening night roster, which is obviously a pretty high number. And in fact, in practice today, it was Juuso Riikola, Chad Ruedel, and Marino kind of rotating as that fourth pair, all pretty much indicators that they're not going to be in the lineup tomorrow night. But the Penguins brass love Juuso Riikola. They were really happy with his camp. As I mentioned, they were extremely impressed with John Marino. And I think when it comes to Jack Johnson, it's an opportunity to, you know, give him the start and see where he's at. He played 82 games last year. A lot of people forget that. The numbers obviously left a lot to be desired, and sometimes the play within games did as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a quick hook when it comes to Jack because of their happiness with the play of Riikola and Marino to just be able to slot in there. And honestly, if you have those guys in there, you have a little bit more offense in your bottom pair, their puck-moving ability out of your bottom pair. So putting Jack Johnson with Justin Schultz, who has looked phenomenal in the preseason, is, I think, a way to maybe see if they can get the absolute best out of Jack Johnson. What that is remains to be seen, but obviously last year left a lot to be desired on the overall body of work front for him.
And it should be pointed out, just so people are aware, the Penguins are $400,000 over the cap right now, which is something that has to be brought into the conversation. Geno Malkin has had an interesting offseason because he's talked openly about several things. Were you surprised at some of the things that some of the items he talked about, and that at times when Crosby's out, he feels like he's more like himself?
That part does not necessarily surprise me because the numbers speak to it. But when you think about, as you mentioned, you know, the conversations that he's had with some of the writers and just the very openness about something dealing with away from the rink and between his ears and everything, is it's kind of interesting to hear him say that stuff because, you know, you go through the grind of a season and sometimes, myself included, you just get so focused on the player as far as the results. You don't necessarily think about the player as far as a human being is concerned. And obviously he was dealing with some stuff last year. I mean, him and Mike Sullivan have some stuff to work. But Evgeny Malkin, I actually talked to him today at practice after the skate, and he was, you know, very upbeat. I think he feels very good about the situation. He's surrounded by, you know, as far as his lines start tomorrow night with Alex Galchenyuk and Brandon Tanev, and two newcomers and a guy in Galchenyuk that can speak his language. I think that there's a little bit more excitement on his end right now than we're seeing last year. And you know what? Like, last year, it was kind of a lost year for Geno, and he admitted that. And it was too bad because we all know when he's on how good he can be, and we also know that the reality is that Father Time is undefeated and the years are starting to tick away. So to lose a year was too bad as far as his overall contributions were concerned. But I'm interested to see if all those words come into action Not necessarily starting tomorrow night, but within a body of work that begins to form tomorrow night from Malkin, because to be completely honest, I do not think he's looked very good in the preseason. I think he still has had quite a few mental mishaps within games and lazy turnovers, some bad penalties, which we saw a lot of last year down the stretch. So I would like to see none of that out of the gate. I don't know how unrealistic that is. But that's going to be a guy that is a huge X factor for a number of reasons for the Penguins this season.
And this is not a personal thing. I mean, he and Crosby get along great. Sometimes people don't realize that as you may be really good friends, but you don't quite have the chemistry. And he and Crosby have never really had great chemistry on the ice.
Well, no, not a 5-on-5. They have on the power play.
On the power play's different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But you're right. They generally don't even skate that often together because of them both being centermen. But I think with Gino, you know, you put him in the middle behind Sid, and he's obviously had an unbelievable career, and his talent speaks for itself. But to play behind one of the best players in the history of the game, which Malkin's not too far off from himself, certainly paid dividends for him. So I think he kind of speaks to the fact that when he talks about, you know, his game elevating with Sid out, is that he's pushed to that number one center role, which he never gets to play when Crosby's healthy. So I think that he's, you know, as I mentioned, he's motivated, but I'd like to see it translated to the ice. He's saying the right things, but what I saw in the preseason was a little alarming. Granted, those games obviously don't matter for anything other than just getting their legs back underneath them in game action, but I'm interested to see how it all plays out starting tomorrow night.
And you're doing tomorrow night, and then Mike Lang comes back, I think, on Saturday, and then Mike Lang night is going to be October 8th. Mike is not doing all the road trips. That's something that's a part of that's opened the door for you. What has Mike's support meant? Because I know Mike has done a really nice job of taking both you and Steve Mears under his wing.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, I can't say enough about the person that he is. I mean, obviously, we all know the broadcaster that he is because he's an icon, and in the game of hockey, and not even just Pittsburgh, I mean, around internationally with the sport, his lines have hit a lot of people and have connected a lot of people to pretty memorable moments throughout Penguins history. And I think, you know, when you look about some of the dark times the Penguins have had, he was the one constant that I think kept a lot of fans, you know, engaged and entertained when the team on the ice wasn't very good. And obviously now things have, you know, over the last couple decades, really the last three decades, started to get in a really good direction for the most part. You've had your down years here and there, but he's been able to reap the benefit of that, calling 5 Stanley Cup championships, which is insane when you say it out loud. I mean, to be able to have his voice behind all of those is such an honor and something that I know he holds near and dear. But as far as my relationship with him, it started from day one. I mean, the first day I met Mike, I still remember it was in training camp in 2015, and he and Phil Bork and I kind of sat down and talked for a little bit, and Mike came up to me, and obviously being a guy who, you know, looked up to Mike in broadcasting, especially broadcasting in the game of hockey, is a larger-than-life figure, but you quickly realize that he's just there to, you know, he'll give you the shot every now and then. He'll give you the funny jab if he feels that it's time. But he's there to help. He's there to be there for you. And he was really, just from day one, a guy that I felt like that I had a connection with. And that's only grown since. I mean, we talk regularly. I actually just talked to him this morning about some stuff for this season. And we're always in communication. He's always giving me little tips as far as what he thinks could help, and, you know, not even within the broadcast itself, about, you know, getting something different out of a player, maybe a different kind of way to ask a question or stuff like that. It's never ending with him as far as the suggestions are concerned, and I mean that in a good way, because he's always looking to have some kind of impact on you in a positive way. And I mean, I literally can't say enough. I could go on about him just as far as the impact he's had on me. And I think that, you know, as I mentioned to a few people, that the biggest thing for Mike from me on my end that Mike's helped me with is just listening to him, because you don't really think about it when you're sitting there and you're listening to him. But my first 2 years just doing pre-games, intermissions, and post-games, and, you know, being there in the studio and hearing how Mike approaches a game, hearing how he calls a game, hearing what he talks about in commercial breaks, I absorbed a lot more of that than I even realized in the moment, because when the time came to call the games, a lot of that came to fruition for me in my head, that I was, you know, thinking like how Mike thought and approaching things how Mike approached it. And obviously that's a pretty good way to go about things given what he's accomplished in his career. So, I mean, he's become my biggest mentor and a great friend, and I mean, it's been an unbelievable experience not just to work with him but to get to work alongside him here over the last couple of years.
Because he'll text you after games. You'll be out on the road doing a game and all of a sudden you'll look at your phone, there's a text from Mike. Now, maybe a good little good-natured jab, but he's always looking out for you, it seems.
Yeah, that's become kind of a tradition with us. It started when I started doing the road games a couple seasons ago, but I've gotten accustomed to, I don't really look at my phone during broadcasts. I keep it in my bag.
You can't.
You get distracted, and it's so easy to get pulled away from just the ability to stay focused and call a game. So I keep it in my bag, but once we get on the bus after the game, I'll pull it out, and without fail, every game there's a text from Mike, something about the game, something about what he thought was funny that me and Borky talked about, or something like that. And sometimes it's not even any suggestions. It's just something about the game or about the team or something to keep it light, but also let me know that, he's there and he's listening and he wants to help. So I've really appreciated that probably more than he could ever know. And it's been pretty cool to just have that connection build with him.
Yeah, same story with me. The phone is never out. It's always in the bag, because I'll go back. There'll be 20 texts. Well, what about this play? That play? I don't know what that play that was.
Yeah,
it's after the game.
So true.
All right. What will it mean to the Penguins? It's a long season, but to get out of the gate, what would it mean confidence wise to what they're doing system wise?
Oh, it'd be huge to have a good start. Now, I believe they will. I think that they're a little peeved for a couple of reasons. One, how last season ended. And two, also that if you listen to a lot of the quote-unquote experts and a lot of the projections this year, there are quite a few people that don't think the Penguins are going to make the playoffs. They think this is the big step back year, and that's not lost on the ears in that dressing room. They're very aware of what people are saying about them. So I would expect them to come out of the gates this year for the first time really in a few years, Steve, with something to prove. I mean, coming off back-to-back Stanley Cup championships, you're expected to be good, but no one's really, everyone's giving you their best because no one is expecting anything less than what they're seeing in the defending Stanley Cup champs. But, when you're a couple years removed from that, when you were swept out of the first round, you have quite a bit to prove as far as your standing as a contender is concerned. And, I mean, they're very much helped by their schedule in October. There's not a lot of travel. And I want to say it's 9 home games in the month of October.
Right.
So that's a lot at PPG Paints Arena. And it's also a story in and of itself, because last year, as good as the Penguins were the previous few years, they were not very good at home. There was not that buzz in the building. They weren't able to create that home ice advantage. And I think having this opportunity to play so many games on your home ice out of the gate gives you an opportunity to build some momentum there, but also to pick up some steam just in general right away, because you're sleeping in your own bed. That said a lot, but that's an extremely underrated thing as the season goes on. And to be able to have that comfort right out of the gate, to sleep in your own bed for a week and a half, not have to travel that much. And when you do, it's a couple games here and a couple games there, and then you're back in Pittsburgh really through Halloween, essentially. I think it lines up pretty well for them. They just obviously have to take care of business on the ice. But as far as putting themselves in a situation to have success out of the gate, I do think the schedule, unlike years past, I do think it does that this year.
Always a pleasure, Josh. Great work. You really have settled in beautifully in the job, and it's great to have you with us.
I appreciate that a lot, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Josh gets off. Mike Lang's the primary voice of the Penguins. Mike can't do every game. Josh does the ones that Mike cannot do. And we'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, half the Sports Illustrated staff has now been laid off. And that started, by the way, if you notice, there had been a resignation. The editor-in-chief announces resignation earlier in the day, and now half the Sports Illustrated staff has been laid off. The Sports Illustrated, for many of us growing up, was one of those items you felt you had to have if you were a sports fan. Now, to me, I actually put more stock in Sporting News than I did in SI growing up. But as time went, I always had both. You know, and, of course, Peter King, who's been a friend of this show for many years, wrote for them. 30 years, I think, Peter was there. And then he's full-time at NBC and Football Morning in America. But this is, this is unfortunately where print is headed. I still like this. You know, for example, I've got a plane trip coming up next week to Iowa. And I usually bring something to read, whether it's a book I'm reading at the time or a magazine. Now, in this case, there's not a book I'm reading right now. I've read all the books. We're done. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, there's something like, to me, of picking up a newspaper and actually physically reading the newspaper as opposed to going online. You know, I could kind of pick through and go, okay, I want to read that. It's a shame to see this happen. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to have Nate Bauer, Ross Tucker, and the 7-0 King. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.